I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your unashamedly celebrational podcast dedicated to Newcastle United Football Club, courtesy of The Athletic FC. I'm here today with two lovely chaps. Chris Woff's here. Hi, Chris. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm absolutely... I was going to say on top of the world, but I'm on top of a lamppost, hanging, dangling down, trying to catch a glimpse of the buses.
That was me.
No, I wish it was me. We'll come on to this, but yeah, I wish I had been very much in that part of Newcastle. But yes, very good, thank you.
Good. We've got George Corkin here today, who's feeling a little under the weather, George, aren't you?
I'm full of cold or some horrible virus, yeah. But I don't feel great or sound great, but internally I feel better than I sound and feel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because I was out and about on Saturday and it was just... Yeah, it was fantastic to be around, and I do feel very enthusiastic about that, even though I don't currently sound it or feel it.
You've come down with a bout of cup fever, haven't you? That's what it is.
cuppy fever, that is what I've got.
We're going to talk about Saturday in detail. We're going to talk about what's coming next as well. But we had an incredible day on Saturday. So many brilliant and hilarious and surreal images and memories. Chris was out and about capturing the best of it.
Wow, football chants have really gone downhill, haven't they?
I see you were in with the ultras, Chris.
Oh, God. So that was me. Ollie had set up the recording equipment, which had been used at Wembley. And on Saturday morning before I went out, I tried to test it in the house with James was very interested in testing it, so that was that attempt. And then I basically failed to use it when we were out and about, so that basically was the best of what I captured as well.
I have to say, Chris, James can carry a tune, but you sound like a goose farting. It's not great.
It's a bit cruel to say this, but that was better than some of the entertainment on the town road.
They did ask me if I'd go up on stage, but yeah, I declined on this occasion. But
Probably for the best. Let's talk about Eddie Howe. He was undoubtedly the main man, wasn't he, during the parade? Emotional at times. The big banner was unfurled from the hotel, and I think the whole day kind of took his breath away, didn't it?
A lot. I mean, I think it was a really, again, emotional moment, really, because you turn the corner out of the stadium, you don't quite know what to expect. We hoped a few people would turn up, and then you get hit by the numbers, and you think the numbers are going to stop as you're travelling through, and they don't. But it's not just the numbers, it's what they're trying to give you. They're trying an expression of their passion.
Yeah.
You can see it in near enough everybody, and we just wanted to give that passion back. It's difficult when you stood on a bus, but just a big thank you to everyone that came and supported us today. It goes to show how huge this football club is, and it's a wonderful city. Just a big thank you to everybody.
He was blown away by the scenes. He's made that clear publicly and sort of privately to his friends. He's spoken about it and just didn't... I think that the fact that it was cold and there was the wind blowing, I think that certain people inside Newcastle thought maybe that would deter some supporters from turning up, A, on the moor, and B, maybe down the streets of Newcastle. But no, very much... It means a heck of a lot to him. I think it was interesting when he spoke to Anton Deck and he said about his own personality and his unique personality, and that it's basically... He can only be himself, and that the Newcastle fans have accepted him for who he is, and that yes, he isn't always in press conferences the most emotional, he isn't always the most emotional on the touchline, but he has shown more of that over the course of the last fortnight, and he can see what being embraced by this city and this club means to him, and obviously he's delivered and he fully deserves all of that. He also spoke about bringing some sheep and some cows onto the moor once they've been vacated, now that he is going to be a freeman of Newcastle. So, I think he's going to have to get a call to a few farmers to see if he can get some livestock.
Yeah, Eddie Howe's menagerie is going to be something to behold, isn't it? George, you can't blame the guy for being emotional, can you, really? When he saw that banner float down from the Sandman Hotel, like, you can't imagine what must have been going through his mind, but it was a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That's why I spent most of Saturday outside St James's. Basically, Chris forced me to go to St James's to report on things there to see what it was like, and I'm really pleased I did. we weren't there on the day of the takeover because we were sort of around the hotel when all that stuff was happening. Yeah. And so I kind of missed out on those scenes. But I think it was, you know, it was very reminiscent of that. And I described it in The Athletic as sort of being like a Geordie Hogarth scene, you know, not Beer Street or Gin Alley, but like Mortal Boulevard. That's how it sort of felt. But you saw so many kind of little scenes as you looked around. It was sort of, you know, you saw sort of like Daft Lads in the middle of it, bouncing up and down, tops off.
Yeah.
Cans spritzing and spraying beer everywhere, some being kind of thrown up in the air and landing quite heavily on people. So don't kind of condone that. But sort of that kind of stuff, you saw kids on people's shoulders. There was a kid on a top of a phone box that looked pretty precarious. There were people balancing on the shoulders of the Sir Bobby Robson statue, standing on top of the Alan Shearer statue, bouncing, you know, singing songs, footballs being punted up in the air. Something else I sort of mentioned, actually, this is a line I should give it due credit. It was our friend Charlotte Robson from True Faith. She talked about this in a piece that we actually did about, I can't remember what it was about. It was about winning something, the prospect of winning something. She made reference to Philadelphia and what happens in Philadelphia when the Eagles win something, or they might win something, a big American football match, the police grease the lamppost to stop people climbing up them. And I made the point that, you know, in Newcastle on Saturday, you would have had to have greased the entire city to stop that happening. There was just so many brilliant sights and sounds and flares being set off. And outside the Sandman hotel, sort of opposite St. James's, there were flags outside of windows. It already looked really good. There were people sort of at the bottom waving flags, and there were flags being draped outside of people's windows. So people have obviously kind of booked in for the weekend or for the night to just to sort of see the parade or be part of it. But then, yeah, I can't remember what time it was, but whether it was about half an hour before the coaches were due to appear, suddenly this huge banner of Eddie Howe is draped down in front of the hotel. It just looked so good when it came down. And then just before the buses started snaking down Barrack Road, two of the volunteers, I guess, did that sort of, what do you call that thing where you come down a mountain when...
Abseiling.
On a rope. Abseiled down. Thank you, Taylor.
No problem.
If only I had to use words for a living. They abseiled down holding a black and white flare. And yeah, it just looked incredible. Those scenes will stay with me forever. I'm so pleased I was there. It was very, very sort of raw and noisy and visceral, messy, and yeah, unlike on the town hall where you weren't allowed to drink or you weren't supposed to drink. There were lots of people sort of drinking, but it was very old school football,
yeah,
those scenes, and anybody who was part of it or was there, it will stay with them forever. I know it will for me.
Did you expect it to be a banner of your own face, George? Is that what you were hoping at that point? Were you thinking that this is...
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed on that. Yeah.
Just with the word marred at the bottom. Chris, George mentioned the town where you were up there, weren't you? Posted up on the grass waiting. How was it up there? What was the atmosphere like?
So I got there just before 2 o'clock, but I was going to say the doors had opened. There weren't any doors, and I'm not sure how difficult it was actually to get sort of in around the town where, but you obviously had to have your free ticket to get there. And there was already hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people trying to get as closest to the stage that they possibly could. And from 2 o'clock, they played the entire cup final back. Without the timings on it, so it was sort of like I was trying to work out, because I was trying to record a little bit here and there. Thankfully, I knew Dan Burns' goal was at 45 minutes, but then when it gets to Isak's goal, you sort of, ooh, is it now? Is it now? I can't remember the phase of play leading up to it.
Just after the one that got ruled out, Chris, if you need
yes,
any...
Yes, well, exactly. No, well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. That would have been useful on Saturday to know. But, well, I did actually know that. But, yeah, so it was... It felt like a long day in many ways, because until sort of Shearer and then the players got on stage, I'll be honest, and this is just my reflections on it, I've spoken to other people who were there who actually really enjoyed the sort of build-up and sort of sat there and come up to it. George and I had sort of discussed how we would cover this, and obviously there'd been a lot of talk of the club had sort of suggested that if you have a ticket for the Moor, please don't go to the parade, just go to the Moor and practice. A lot of people didn't, a lot of people did both. I wish I'd come and seen at least some of the scenes. I saw them along Great North Road, but that's just how I felt. I felt I was slightly away from it, and it was almost like anticlimactic until it got to the point where the players actually arrived. And it's like, rather than building it up, it didn't really for me. Now, I was in a work capacity. I was in a slightly different environment to everyone else. So I'm not saying that that is universal in terms of the people at them, where every one of them were, or most people I spoke to, seemed to have a great time and seemed to be really enjoying it. Yeah. And obviously then they are waiting for that moment when the sort of players arrive and they come up on stage and the like. So, but just yeah, I regret that from my own personal perspective. I would have liked to have sampled it because I saw the photo. I mean, you see the photos. There's the one from the Chronicle offices, which are sort of above Eldon Square, just where they're sort of at the crossroads at the bottom of Gallagher near next.
Literally, and you just where see, I was standing there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You just see that the sort of crowds there. You see the ones looking up onto Haymarket when there's people stood on top of Haymarket. The John Lewis car park where there's just people spiralling all the way up. I mean, yes. They are fantastic scenes. And so, yeah, I enjoyed later on. And mainly, I suppose, just from a sort of work perspective, I felt like I was missing out at that stage. So that's just my view on things.
I agree with you, though, Chris. I mean, I don't mean I agree with you. It's you're entitled to your view, but I experienced your bit as well, and I agree. I think, you know, but you were there in a work capacity. You had an incredible place at the front, sort of when the stage stuff was happening. But you also kind of like behind the scenes, behind the stage, and you just didn't get any sort of sense of kind of atmosphere there. I did come back after that. So as soon as, you know, so you wait for an hour, you have that incredible build up for the buses to come past, and of course they go past in 2 minutes and it's all done. And then I should have said it was like sort of reverse match day in reverse, where you suddenly had this magnet pulling you away from St. James's, where on match day you have that incredible sense of everybody congregating on St. James's, and this time it was like this surge of people going back to the Moor, and I did it, and I did it very easily, you know, in terms of timing, and beat the bus back, and so lots of people sort of did that. But yeah, you know, then kind of coming back to the media bit where you were, it wasn't built for us to sort of be soaking it up and stuff like that. We were there to speak to players afterwards. And things like that, and sort of see the scenes at the front of the stage. I think if you'd been there further behind the barriers and we're sitting down and we're watching and we're there with family and they're taking a picnic and things like that, I'm sure it was absolutely brilliant. But yeah, no, to repeat, I am absolutely delighted that I did the bit that I did, because I think you just got that absolute sort of surge of emotion building up to the players appearing, and then when they came past, it was sort of just electric. You were down on Percy Street, weren't you?
I was, yeah, I was right on the corner of Eldon Square and Percy Street coming down from Gallagher, and it was pretty intense down there. It got very busy very quickly. I got down there about an hour and a half before the bus came past, and I sort of posted up on a wall and just knew I needed a decent vantage point because I wanted to try and get as many photos as I could and stuff, and I wanted a decent view of the bus coming round. But while I was waiting, I put my noise-cancelling headphones on and just listened to some music, and I just stood there and took in the scenes as it got busier. And then about 10 minutes before the bus came past, I took the headphones out, and I couldn't believe how loud it was. It was ridiculous how loud it was. And by this point, there's lads climbing lampposts with their shirts off.
Yeah.
There's a kind of, I don't know what you call it, like a storefront across the road where there's people have climbed up on top of there. There's people shimmying up street signs. There was three guys on top of a phone box next to me with flares, and a guy wearing a hard hat, which I thought that was a good idea because you stand on top of a phone box, you might need that at some point. I think it was the closest thing to fever pitch that I can say I've experienced in that sort of setting. And then when the bus came down, it was just fantastic. You know, it was absolutely brilliant. The kids on people's shoulders and stuff like that. And, you know, I've got a very vivid memory of going to the 1992 parade with my mum when I was a kid, 93, sorry, when they won the old First Division. And it just sort of brought all that, brought all that back to me, you know, being there when I was a kid and seeing it.
Yeah,
and
I was there.
You know, that's burned into my memory, and I can imagine this will be burned into those kids' memories as well.
Totally, and I'm so pleased that they did it in the end. Obviously, there was a lot of talk last week about whether there would be a parade or how that would work, and I just think it was so important that they did that. You know, there was the echoes of the 98-99 FA Cup finals when Newcastle did it, and after losing, and, you know, all those people turned out on the streets. I just think it's the right thing to do. You know, it was great that there was then, you know, that there was then that sort of a hub afterwards that people kind of could go to, and the stage and all of that stuff happening. I think that was good, but obviously there had to be space constraints for that. And I just think the fact that the city was allowed to sort of express itself and to turn out in the way it did was really important. And Yeah, I mean, it was throngs of people. The club have kind of estimated that it was 150,000 on the streets, 150,000 at the venue. So you're talking about 300,000 people, potentially. And, yeah, if anything, that feels like an underestimate to me.
Yeah,
but it was amazing scenes, and totally will remember. And I'm sorry for Chris that you didn't get to see that side of it. But, yeah, it was beautiful. It was chaos. It was absolute chaos. But it was beautiful.
No, and I think that was wonderful. And I'm so glad that there was a parade. And the plan was always for a parade. And I think, could the communication have been better leading up to it? Yes, because I suppose it came out initially that there's the bit on the town moor and then the parade. But all of that was because, as the leader of the city council said on stage, Newcastle were essentially trying to put on a Glastonbury-esque event, which, you know, is planned for a year, if not longer,
exactly.
In 12 days, basically. And the organisation behind it and pulling everything together and getting all this sorted, I think that was absolutely brilliant. And it would have been nicer in some ways if they could have had a longer parade, but there were various reasons why they couldn't. That allowed more people to see the players and the buses and to see them going past. That allowed families really to get out and about and see it, whether that was on the moor or elsewhere. And so all that was brilliant. And just you saw the very best of Newcastle United as a club, and also really Newcastle as a city at the weekend, or the wider Geordie conurbation and any sort of wider diaspora who came back because they wanted to witness it or watched it on any of the live streams that there were, or have seen all the pictures on social media and online and try to just soak up this day, because you get some people externally who are looking at it and sort of laughing almost. Those people who support clubs or follow clubs who win a lot, or just think, you know, this is the Carabao Cup, why they're reacting like this.
Doesn't matter though.
No. Matter. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter.
It's not.
Well, that's the point. That's the point I was going to make. That's the point I'm trying to make. Is that this is.
What's going on with it?
Coming from you, that's failing to understand being involved in the sort of wider Newcastle story and Newcastle family, for want of a sort of better term, and what Newcastle have gone through in the 56 years of not winning anything, the 70 years of not winning a domestic trophy. Will it be like this again if Newcastle do go on and win things? Maybe it never will feel exactly like that, as we've said before, but for that on Saturday, those images will go down the generations, because it was quite staggering.
Football doesn't do empathy, and it shouldn't do. I mean, it's not supposed to. You know, that's not the big point of it. It's like people just couldn't get their heads around it.
Yeah.
It's not for them. It was for us. It was our event. People say only the League Cup. Well, it's not only the League Cup. It's only everything. That's what it was for us.
Yeah.
It was absolutely everything. Who cares what other people think?
I want to talk about the players just briefly, because this day was as much for them as it was for us, and they've been magnificent through all of this. And some of them had a very, very good day indeed, Chris, didn't they? Willa Sula seemed to be enjoying himself. Jacob Murphy was made for events like this, wasn't he? His face never stopped grinning the entire way around. It looked like great fun on the bus.
Very much so, and like on the town moor, for everyone who was present, the players were also under a strict alcohol ban, because as we'll come on to later, they have a very important game on Wednesday. But some of the players, they're not internationals, that I think had a pretty good time in Dubai and made the most of that. But someone like Dan Byrne, was chatting to Dan Byrne afterwards, he was saying, I still haven't had a drink and I'm not going to be able to have a drink. But it's not about that. He's just like, this was because you had that weird moment of they had the sort of Sunday night, but some of them were going away on international duty.
Yeah. That
they haven't been able to celebrate together really beyond that night, never mind with supporters and the like. So for all of them to come back and then experience that and be on the bus and go through. And I mean, the bus parade was meant to be half an hour, which always seemed ambitious to me.
Yeah.
It took nearly the best part of an hour because for safety reasons, it had to slow down a little bit because of the number of people there. But also rightly, they wanted to make sure that those people had turned out, got at least a little bit of a glimpse of everyone. So they rightly slowed it down and made sure that they got through. And yeah, you could see the scenes. And by the time they did arrive, so where we were waiting for the players was behind the stage, and when the bus came along Great North Road, the players are all coming off and they're dancing and singing and leading chants with the people who are lined along Great North Road. So they very much did love it. They really enjoyed it. I saw some videos last night, which I hadn't seen at the time, if we're going to come on to Bruno Guimaraes on stage. But yeah, there was that sort of mischievous fun element about it, and that was them really embracing it. And I think that's where Howe's got things spot on, is that for someone who is so focused and usually it's on to the next thing, he knows that the players have to embrace this moment. So up until the end of Saturday, it was allow these players the time to really soak this up, have that back and forth with supporters, let everyone enjoy it, then it comes back to the business after this. And I think it was very important that they were given that chance as well to really see what it meant to everyone. Because that, as they were planning it, it was almost like seeking assurance as to how big this would be. Like, if you're not from the area, like, how big will this event actually be? And it's like, this is going to be colossal. And it was colossal. And sort of that was justified in sort of the amount that was actually thrown at it, that it was very much justified.
Yes. Chris, you mentioned the on-stage interviews and the scenes when the three captains recreated the lifting of the cup, George, as well.
Yeah, it was a brilliant moment. And there was emotion leading up to that in the sort of bits beforehand as well. Alan Shearer coming on stage and talking very emotionally about finally seeing his team, his club, win a trophy.
Unfortunately, my dad passed away last May. He was lucky enough to be there at the 69 final. I just wish he would have hung on for one more year just to see and sample this. So, but he would have been watching up above and he would have been as proud as I was.
Yeah, it was great. And then suddenly the players are there and they're coming on stage and it was just, yeah, fabulous. And yeah, you know, we were lucky, Chris and I, we saw that at Wembley. 32,000 people did, but to sort of have that recreated in the middle of Newcastle was just like a great moment, sort of like cathartic moment almost. Finally, the club have done it and the team have done it. And I mean, literally, it was a perfect stage for them to do that. And yeah, what a great sight. What a great sign.
Brilliant. Bruno Guimaraes seemed to have a really good afternoon, Chris, didn't he?
Sandro Tonali! Sandro Tonali! Eat spaghetti!
Jake Usman on Twitter spotted that somebody else was maybe the mastermind behind that, Chris.
Yes, it looks like it was Alexander Isak. And as I say, the players were sort of... It looks like he brought Bruno across and he was almost giving the tune to him, to the video that Jake seems to have... to have found of it. But Bruno was very mischievous, and I think that Ant and Dec found it a little bit chaotic. They enjoyed everything about it, but like, it was almost that they had a sort of set plan as to what they were meant to do, and Bruno just kept on coming across and trying to get the microphone or start a chant here and there. And he was very much, you could tell he revels in that sort of environment. He absolutely loved all of it. He was singing the song. If you see I'm out of tune, I think Bruno rivals me as well for being out of tune with some of his singing as well. I'll just put that out there. But no, it was great, those sort of scenes, and he had every single member of the squad just about lifting the cup, taking it in turns, to the crowd was sort of like, ooh, and then they'd lift it, and then...
What, do that noise again, Chris.
Ooh, baby.
Ba, ba, black sheep, have you any wool? Brilliant moment when the 150,000 people were singing that alongside you, Chris.
Lovely stuff. Never forget that, Chris.
Very similar to sort of a lot of the post... victory photos, team photos that you see, and the ones on the pitch, that Howe wanted to single out those members of the backroom staff who aren't always, well, are very much, as he described them, unsung heroes. So you had Tony Toward, who's been there for decades, as an administrator behind the scenes. You have Ray Thompson, Kitman, Glenn Patterson, who's the player liaison officer, and Eddie Howe was getting each of them to come up and basically lift the Carabao Cup. And I've missed some out there just because there's sort of too many to mention. And Howe was keen on doing that because he sees this as very much collective success. He needs everyone to have buy-in beyond just the players. And that was really a sort of lovely moment, that they get their sort of moment in the sun, really, in front of all of those supporters cheering them. You saw the likes of James Bunce, who seemed to be very much enjoying himself on the buses. He was bouncing up and down.
Bouncing
up and down. So, yeah, that was, again, a great special moment to share.
Yeah, it's important that they do that. And they did the same thing at Wembley. I sort of saw that all the backroom staff were getting a chance to hold the trophy up in front of the crowd. It was something that Rafa Benitez did at Newcastle when the team won the championship. As soon as that happened and they got the trophy, he made sure that absolutely everybody who was part of the team or part of the backroom staff got a picture with the trophy. He was a very sort of undemonstrative man as well, a bit like Howe in that sort of sense.
Yeah.
But that was absolutely the way that he showed his love in that moment, was making sure that everybody got that kind of picture. And it is that truism that a club, it's not just about the first team. It can't function without all the people behind the scenes who, you know, who may not have a influence on the first team, but are absolutely sort of pivotal to the running of the club. And it is that, you know, it is that kind of great reminder. And it's a great reminder too that these are elite people from top to bottom at the club now. And to have that little moment of recognition was very, very important and a very nice touch.
Bruno also ignored the warnings from Martin Deck that he wasn't meant to swear. And I know there's been a lot of sort of comeback. I wonder if there's going to be like Ofcom complaints because...
Live on BBC, wasn't it?
Well, exactly, yeah. For those international listeners who don't know who Ofcom are, they're basically the regulator for TV and broadcast across here, and you're not meant to swear live on air, and yet Bruno repeatedly did it, both in song and just in speech.
And Mark Gillespie as well.
And Mark Gillespie,
let's not forget Mark.
He's Brazilian! He only costs 40 million! We think it's it's so little!
I also want to apologise to listeners and basically the rest of you on the podcast, because I did fail in my duty where I thought I was going to go and try and see if I could get Ant and Deck, or Ant or Deck, but preferably both of them, to see if I could get them onto the podcast. But I failed in my duty there, so I apologise to everyone, including Ant and Deck, if you did want to be on. I'm sure that would have been even bigger for you than being on the top of the bus, which is said real life goal for you. chatting to us three morons, I'm sure would have been brilliant. But
they're bloody good, aren't they?
Oh, they are very, very good.
Ah. They are so good. They're consummate pros, but they're so easy with it. And it's, you know, I think that is sort of their skill. I'm sure that's a very, very difficult job, but to make it sort of seem so easy, they're brilliant.
I can't imagine what it must be like trying to be a professional broadcaster when everyone around you is complete amateurs and losing their marbles. I just can't imagine how that feels.
No, I'm sure. Yeah. Are you making... Yeah. No, okay. No, let's just move on.
What you will.
Are you walking?
It was obviously a very emotionally charged day, wasn't it? We've had lots of messages from people. We've whittled it down to a few that we're going to have time to put in. Here's one from Alan. Took my 13-year-old daughter. Never seen so many people. Absolute amazement when they unveiled the How Tifo Down the Sandman. I can't wait for the next one. There we go. Alan's already got his eyes on the next one.
The next cup or the next Tifo? The George Tifo. Is that why he's looking for the George Corkin Tifo?
George Corkin Tifo, yeah.
But I think I've had that thought as well. It's like, you know, I think there is that thing. It's like, oh yeah, okay, I could get used to this. Whether it feels the same, in, you know, the next time, I don't know. I think this is so incredibly special because it's the first time for such a long time. It's the first time in most of our lifetimes. But, you know, just that feeling of release and celebration is so good. There's no reason why we can't do that again.
Johnny messaged us as well to say, proud to overcome my neurodiversity and be part of some history. I saw my heroes. The city was celebrating and I'm still buzzing from the occasion. That's brilliant, Johnny. Well done for getting into town and experiencing that. There were people there from all walks of life, weren't there, Chris? There was older people, there was kids, you know, everybody was out, everybody wanted to be on the streets. I think the parade was the thing that nearly everybody wanted to be at, and then brought people together from all walks of life.
Yeah, and that's for everyone to experience that moment together. That's what I think is so special. You have sort of people who probably aren't like dedicated fans, for want of a sort of better term. You've probably got casual supporters who maybe don't always follow everything that goes on with the team, but wanted to be part of this moment of history and wanted to sort of pay homage to this group of players and staff who have brought this moment of wonder really to a club which has not had this for so long. So yeah, that is brilliant, and hopefully that is, you guys are mentioning, remember in 93, I have vague memories of sort of 98, 99 being on the streets.
Yeah.
And hopefully that sort of, and that was that, for me, that was obviously I was there to commemorate them just getting to the final, whereas this is actually a victory, and hopefully that inspires so many going forward over the years and generations to come, and that they will look back at that sort of moment and be like, I was there, and that was what got me involved in the club. It might make more people more hooked onto it as well. As I say, those casual fans may become more dedicated or more have more interest going forward.
Yes, a very emotional and a brilliant occasion. It prompted a few people, just like the cup final, to send us in some nice emails as well. I want to read a couple of these out with apologies from producer Ollie for having to edit them down, but we are constrained by time, obviously. Alex said, I want to say a big thank you to you and everyone who contributed their stories to the Family Matters section of the Cup Hangover Special. It helped release a lot of feelings that have been bubbling near the surface for me since the final. I watched it and celebrated it in Barnsley with my mate Ross and his mum Helen a while well. His dad, Richard, and his brother, Luke, were at Wembley. I was born and raised in Sheffield, where Ross and I were the only Newcastle fans at our school. Looking back, I count myself really lucky, though. I had a great relationship with my dad and his dad, who we visited in Whitley Bay, and football was a big part of that. In autumn 2001, my dad wrote me a short letter and mentioned our forthcoming League Cup tie away to Barnsley. It's the last message I had from him. He had a brain hemorrhage and died soon after. My granddad died 2 years later. I was welcomed into Ross's family, and that helped me keep alive precious memories of my own. Thank you for letting me share my own story. Best wishes to you all. This one's from Joy. He says, like so many listeners, I've had my own period of reflection on the recent cup win. I'm adopted Geordie since the age of 10 or 11, all the way from the Mississippi Gulf Coast. My childhood was very rough, and the household I grew up in was unideal, to say the least. But my friend's house, his Geordie dad was our football coach, was a small place of refuge where I could escape from that and be a kid. On Saturdays, they would either have the old Fox soccer channel up if Newcastle was playing, or a live score update. I left Mississippi for Florida, but I kept Newcastle. Later, living in Australia, COVID hit. There were a few things that kept me sane. One of them was Pod on the Tyne. Even if it was bleak news, it was just something to cling to. Just when my mates in the club started waning, it switched. The takeover, Eddie Howe was hired. There's been so much fun as a fan over the last few years. And then we won. When Dan Burns' goal hit the back of the net, I let out my biggest yell. My neighbour texted me to ask me if I was okay. When the final whistle blew, I sat there in disbelief. All I could think about was my life up until that point, about my friend's dad, and about how even when my life was in dark spots, at least there was always Newcastle United, even at their worst. Life has tested me in various ways that I've always been blessed to be a Newcastle fan. Alive by chance, adopted Geordie by the grace of God. How are the lads? And we've got one more here as well, which I'm going to read out. I'm a 48-year-old Perth-born former twin of two Geordies that left the UK as £10 poms in the 70s. I've supported Newcastle since I was about 20 years old, but my former brother was a mad fan far more than me. He even met Alan from work once. Wow. He passed away of stomach cancer at 31, 17 years ago, and that still feels like yesterday. I wear the mantle for him and his memory. I watched the Cup final at a pub in Fremantle with my dad and had the most emotional roller coaster of 90 minutes. Among all the emotions, a huge regret that Jimmy missed out on seeing something ridiculously special. My now family of four are heading to Newcastle in April and actually attending the Man United match. Our two kids, daughter and son, will get experience in James's Park, probably for the first and last time. It should be one hell of an experience. Keep up the great work, lads. Your chatter is globally appreciated from Chris and Kaz and Josie and Dylan. Some lovely messages, Chris. You can see how much it means to people all over the world, not just in Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, you just keep seeing all these stories or hearing all these stories leading up to the final, and then since the final and obviously since the celebrations, again, it shows how much Newcastle United means to so many people and what this cup victory sort of means. I mean, we did the round table last week, the sort of as we and got the view from different generations of fans, and also from fans who are from different locations and didn't have those previous links. But to everyone it means something slightly different, but it means a heck of a lot. It's just wonderful to hear these stories and also how emotional people are because of it, and that the reason why Alan Shearer getting emotional on stage, beyond it just being sort of the Granite Man Alan Shearer getting emotional on stage, he basically spoke for so many fans who were remembering those who couldn't be there with them as well.
Absolutely.
And yeah, that's as we've said, that's what a lot of people have sort of their thoughts have immediately turned to over the course of the past couple of weeks once Newcastle actually won the cup.
I'd just like to say thank you to Alex, Joey and Chris as well. That was very beautiful, very emotional hearing those stories, and thank you so much for corresponding with us. And yeah, that's exactly as Chris says, it's about family, but then Newcastle United is a family at our best. You know, that's exactly what we are, and that is a very beautiful thing. And in these moments it gives us a chance to take a step back and sort of look at ourselves, to look at our lives and our existence up to this point, how we've got there, the people we've lost on the way, the people who are still with us. And you can't not be hugely emotional in those moments. I know that I certainly have been, and really special to hear your contributions. Thank you.
We also got a voice note from Big Dan, not that one, in Hamilton, Ontario.
I began following the Premier League during the NHL's season-long lockout of 2004-2005. Seeing the Magpies lift the Carabao Cup was a surreal experience, and the passionate stories I've heard and seen have truly been inspiring and heartwarming. I'll never claim to be an adoptive Geordie myself, in part because I understand and respect the ties of local fans to the clubs and communities they support, For most Canadian fans of my age demographic, their local team did not even exist when we began following the game. In my case, when I started following the Premier League, I had a desire to follow a team from a city that was like my family's hometown of Hamilton. A blue-collar, working-class port city on the shores of Lake Ontario that goes by the nicknames of Steel Town and the Hammer, due to its residents historically having worked within the steel industry and having a reputation of being tough individuals themselves. Like any good Canadian, hockey was and still is my first sporting passion, and given the proximity of Hamilton to Toronto, the Toronto Maple Leafs are my first love. They have one of the largest and most passionate fan bases in the country. They had a polarizing and controversial owner for a long period of the team's history that many saw as restricting them from achieving success. They have not won the Stanley Cup since 1967, currently standing as the longest active streak in the NHL. The team are often ridiculed as the butt end of jokes by their rivals, so perhaps it was no surprise at all what drew me to Newcastle fandom. I knew these thoughts and feelings already because I basically support the Newcastle United of the NHL. Newcastle have reignited that hope in me that it will happen for the other teams I follow as well. If they can win their first domestic trophy in 70 years, why can't the Maple Leafs win their first league championship in almost 60? Hope springs eternal, and while it may wane sometimes, true supporters never let it die. Your podcast and the Newcastle United fan base are a testament to the true spirit of fandom and support. Never change, lads. Cheers from Canada.
Johnny from Cornwall also emailed in asking about attitudes to adopted Geordies on social media, the idea that their opinions are secondary. I don't think that's the case, really, Chris. We love hearing from Newcastle fans all over the world, not just in the Northeast.
Well, we certainly do, yeah. And I mean, we had Pete on the podcast last week as part of the round table, who had no previous links to the Northeast, who came to follow the club because of a combination of Newcastle Brown Ale, Alan Shearer, and Newcastle doing well, and him liking the sort of black and white stripes and the fact that they don't really win anything. I suppose there probably are split opinions on that, and some people maybe don't see adopted Geordies in the same sort of way, but I mean, you just have to look at the very fact that the head coach who's delivered this success is now an adopted Geordie.
Exactly,
or every player who didn't have those previous links on that bus is an adopted Geordie. So many people have passions for Newcastle United who are not necessarily from the area or didn't have those sort of previous links. So, I'm sorry to hear that Johnny feels that way, because as George said, this is very much a Newcastle United family, and so I don't think it makes anyone less of a supporter because they didn't necessarily grow up within a Newcastle family.
I hate this. I mean, I hate this sort of that kind of attitude. I mean, you know, I understand that in the past people would be called glory hunters if they, you know, if they kind of came to support Newcastle during a moment of uplift. But like for Newcastle to be the club it wants to be, needs to be, it has to attract more fans and interest from around the world. It absolutely 100%. Has to do that. That's why they went to the US a couple of years ago. That's why they went to the Far East last summer. You know, that's part of what they do. But then when you go to those places, you also get to see firsthand the fan base that Newcastle have already there. And, you know, I've talked about this repeatedly, about how blown away I was, particularly in the US, only because of the language, because I got to chat to so many people over there who, you know, had effectively a lot of people sort of stumbled upon Newcastle years and years ago and then stuck with them through the tough times. Those people are incredibly important. They're part of our family. You know, yes, of course, people who are born in the city or close to the city have that sort of umbilical link to the club, and you can't deny that. And the people who travel with the team home and away, you know, are hugely important and absolutely part of the lifeblood of the club. But everybody is welcome and everybody is valid. And, you know, I wish that there was room for everybody to it. And I'm sure it's partly to do with, you know, the difficulty that there is now to get tickets to the stadium. And so, you know, that's part of the kind of conversation. But everybody is welcome. You're all part of our family. We're delighted to have you. You're part of us.
Yes, if the more Newcastle United fans are on the world's a better place as far as I'm concerned.
Well, exactly, yeah.
100%. So let's talk about the lasses. London Lionesses came to Kingston Park on Sunday, and unfortunately they left as championship table toppers, having put Newcastle out of the title race and therefore promotion as well. Only one team goes up this time. A 2-1 win for the visitors in what the stats say was an evenly contested game. Not a great afternoon, George.
No, I'm disappointed I wasn't there. I would have been if I'd been feeling a bit better, but sadly I just felt so awful that wasn't able to go. No, again, I mean, it was already asking a lot for them to go up. It's such a brutal division with only one team going up. They've, again, though, it's a good chance to sort of step back and reflect. Yes, you know, they didn't hide from the fact that they wanted to do promotion. That was the aim. They didn't, you know, hide from that ambition. They've come up short from that, but I think it's been a great learning experience for the team and for the club. It has been a big step up, the division. Everyone knows that.
It'll only make them stronger going forward, won't it?
Yeah, and I've just got so much faith in this group, in the team and the team behind the team. They're just good people. They're strengthening. They strengthen in January. They'll carry on doing that, and they'll be so much the better for this experience. Whilst it's disappointing that it hasn't happened this season, that disappointment has a big context.
Yeah, and I mean, it had looked a long shot really for a good few weeks. The win over Sunderland gave Newcastle still that sort of outside chance. But I think really, would it have been great to get that triple promotion? Of course it would have been. But in some ways, if Newcastle can learn a little bit more about the Championship and build going forward, maybe just jumping so many divisions in a short space of time, if you try to flip this a little bit, maybe it is good that Newcastle have a little bit of time for Becky and Langley and her staff to acclimatise to the league, and also a lot of the players, and then just add that sort of depth going forward. And they know more about this division now. They've been in and around the promotion places. They just need to learn to get a bit more consistent. I mean, the weird thing about this division is that they've beaten Sunderland twice, Sunderland have beaten Durham twice, and Durham have beaten Newcastle twice. So it just shows
it's all over the place.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It is. There is very little between so many of those teams, certainly from sort of third down to seventh or eighth. And so if Newcastle can learn and grow from this experience, that's exactly what they need. And I'm sure they'll be far stronger next season. They'll add more players, and yeah, hopefully we'll get to see far more moments like the time we had Derby at St James's Park when they got 38,500 there.
Brilliant, yes. A final word on this from Howie the Lasses on Blue Sky. A tough league, some real battlers at the top, a big season of growth and lessons ready for next year though. Yes, we're all behind the Lasses for next season.
Well, good pressure from Hales has stolen it back, and here comes Murphy. Murphy, an option to a right, finds Lemson, and it's in! Brilliant from Newcastle United, and finished off in style by Lundstedt.
Right then, the Premier League, it's back. Two episodes in a week hasn't always worked out great for us, so we're going to preview the next two games as a pair. Back to reality, Chris. Brentford, our first game in, what, it's been about 6 months since we played football? Something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's felt like a long, long time. Obviously, the last time they played in the Premier League was West Ham away on the Monday before the final.
That's right, yeah.
And yeah, it's about now sort of refocusing, and the players were in training yesterday, which is Sunday. They're going to be in training again today. I think they might even be in training all the way through till Wednesday morning for a little bit of it as sort of the refocus begins. And I thought that Howe struck the perfect tone on Saturday, allowed the players to embrace and celebrate it all as he did. And then basically his signing off message was, but now we have to go again. There are a huge 10 games to go. I've written about this for Monday morning, actually, that Newcastle, the thing that's been talked about not too much because of the final and just winning the cup has been there, is that Newcastle are already in Europe for next season, but they're currently in the third tier competition, the UEFA Conference League. And I've sort of looked at what that means, the being in Europe this early, but also what Newcastle could still achieve, which is they could get Europa League, maybe sixth and seventh in the Premier League. But if they were to finish top five, they're almost certainly going to be five Champions League qualification positions. And that's what they really want. Jacob Murphy on Saturday talked about that being the big dog. That's what they want, the big dog of the Champions League, to be back there. Sandro Tonali has made that quite clear. That's his goal. And so I think that this could go one of two ways. And it could be that Newcastle have won something and it's sort of just this rest of the season filters out. But very much sounds, and you expect from the way that Eddie Howe works, but also the way that the players were there, their mentality and the way that they're speaking, that this is about, right, we've achieved something massive, but we can actually make this season even more memorable by trying to get into Europe's premier competition if they can. And that's where Brentford becomes the first test of that.
Jimmy on Blue Sky said, I'm just interested to see how the celebrations, that is, affect things. Will the players feel less pressure now? Does it add more pressure? Will the rest of the season be a case of after the Lord Mayor's show? Or do we have tremendous momentum now? It's all very new and very different. George, he makes a good point.
it is fascinating. Like Chris, I'm ready to see some football now. I definitely feel that sort of spell without a match. My feeling is that Brentford will be a brilliant atmosphere. It's the, you know, chance again for St James's to sort of to welcome Howe and the team, and I think that'll be a kind of great moment as well. But you know, is this like a massive exhalation of breath because Newcastle have, you know, they've won a trophy for the first time forever. They're in Europe, so they've done what they set out to do. Is that how it feels, or can they ramp it all up and go again? I think it's a, you know, I think that's a fascinating conversation, and I think it becomes a fascinating moment. I mean, for me, like, this is the thing that I've always wanted Newcastle to do. This is the thing I've always wanted to witness. And, like, the idea, in some ways, that there's more football to be played is sort of ridiculous. I mean, it's like...
Surely we're stopped, you know, now. That's like it. We should, that's got to be it.
Yeah, exactly. This should be the full... This should be, like, the full stop. And, of course, it doesn't work like that. So I think it becomes kind of very interesting. Can Newcastle carry that through? Do the players feel that sense of exhalation as well? Or can they keep going? I think that does become fascinating. Chris said things can go one of two ways. It could actually go three ways because what they've been this season is very inconsistent. Fair point, so they could win some games, they could win some games, they could lose some games, and they could kind of carry on like that. I do think it will be a good atmosphere against Brentford, though. And there should be because, you know, Brentford was also one of the low points of the season. That 4-2 defeat down there was the cause of some real reflection, and it was one of those moments that Newcastle and Howe had to kind of go again. There were a lot of individual meetings that week, team meetings, to try and get to the bottom of Newcastle's poor form. And it was then became the start of, you know, that 9-game run of victory. So it was very important. So Newcastle will feel that they owe Brentford one. On the face of it, you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to attack that game with huge confidence, with great momentum. But yeah, does it become after the Lord Mayor show? We'll see.
It's all Leicester, George, with the greatest of respect. They'll probably be a bit of a less daunting challenge than Brentford.
Well, I mean, you would have thought so, wouldn't you? Says George, desperately attempting to look up Leicester's form on the internet.
Well, they've lost a heck of a, they have lost a heck of a lot of games recently.
Well done, Chris. That's the first time anybody has used the word heck in actual language since 1926. So
again, Chris only thinks in terms of sausages. That's all he thinks.
What a heck of a thing to happen. yes, they. My absolute knowledge of Leicester tells me. Let me just count these up: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They've lost 7 games in a row, Chris.
They beat Spurs away, but they've lost all of their other games, pretty much.
yeah. If you look at their Premier League form, they've lost absolutely every single game since the middle of December, apart from Spurs. So, I mean, yeah, you would think that that Newcastle will go there thinking they should be getting 3 points.
You would absolutely hope so.
That would be a heck of a return.
It certainly would. Tommy on Blue Sky said this. On reflection, did the disappointment of missing out on European qualification do us a huge favour this season? I can't help but think we would have struggled to win the League Cup and still be in with a shout of the top five if we were jetting off around Europe picking up injuries willy-nilly. I do love the term willy-nilly, by the way. I feel
that needs to be brought back into
regular vernacular.
It's also, in some ways, you're looking at Newcastle getting into the UEFA Conference League, and that's great in one sense, but at the same time, it's also, that's what they would have been in for this season. They would have had the Thursday-Sunday routine, which is different. They would have also had, there's more travel involved in those competitions, largely because of the geographical spread, because most of the best teams tend to be in Western Europe, which is why the Champions League in theory actually isn't as difficult. So you're flying back on a sort of Thursday night, Friday, you don't have as much preparation time going at the weekend. But Newcastle at some stage need to learn how to cope with that sort of variable, because they're probably not going to be in the Champions League absolutely every single season, certainly for the next few years, and so they may dip into the lower competitions. But did it benefit them for this year? I think probably so, because they are going to play 48 games this season, which is only 3 fewer than last season. Now, some of those haven't been as arduous in terms of they haven't had the Champions League matches, so some of them they've been able to rotate to a certain degree, they've been less intense. But if you'd added in extra number of European games into that, do Newcastle have the depth, having not signed a player to strengthen their first 11 for 3 windows? They probably couldn't have done what they've done up to this point. They probably wouldn't have the sort of situation going in this summer. They just couldn't have afforded to have certainly let the likes of Almiron and Kelly go in January as well if they'd been in that position. So I think, yes, it's in some ways, in hindsight, it probably has done Newcastle a massive favour. But going into the final few weeks of last season, the focus was on trying to get into Europe, and so it was seen as a disappointment when they didn't, even if the Conference League wasn't what they wanted. But fast forward 10 months and Newcastle having won the Carabao Cup and being in with a decent shout of potentially getting into the Champions League, I think, yeah, you can say that that probably has helped them.
And Leicester, not the toughest matchup, but too daunting a journey for Chris to go down there. Physically unable to get south of Barnard Castle these days, Chris Woff. So Jacob has been roped into that one.
Yeah, I'm doing that as well. So me and Jacob there. I'm actually writing something about the three teams who look likely to, well, almost certain to go back down. So I'm doing an epic trip to see Ipswich, Southampton, and finally Leicester play on consecutive days. So Jacob's coming up to write about Newcastle, so it'd be nice to see the young Jedi there.
Yes, the Padawan. Our next show, as we said, will be after the Leicester game. But the address is podonthetyne@theathletic.com if you want to get in touch with any thoughts. That's pretty much it. It does feel like it's time to draw a line under it now and concentrate on the league for a bit. But we'll never forget this last fortnight. No matter what happens, this is what it's all about.
Black and white chaos. There are people who have climbed up lampposts and traffic lights standing on top of them. A city centre sign is a lad in a black and white shirt sitting on that, struggling. It looks a bit painful.
And some upsailers with flares as well. Just a top this, off. Look at that.
This is like unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Wow. I knew there was going to be a lot of people, but that was ridiculous. Like this evening, seeing people hanging out of windows and on top of shops and all sorts, it was amazing. Like, I'll never forget that. Like, I had to keep like composing myself because I could feel myself getting emotional when you could see people in the crowd. Yeah, like special.
There are footballs being thrown in the crowd, there are banners, there's a little lad in a black and white shirt holding a chequered flag on top of a phone box. His dad, I think, is holding his legs.
Look at him in the tree! Be careful, young'un!
Alan Shearer's statue has a Carabao Cup final scarf on its left wrist. People are leaning up against it. And there's dancing in the crowd. There are random chants going on.
Yeah, to be on that bus knowing that we were the first in so long to do it, I think makes it that even more special. That's why we spoke about it so much, like being the first, because now that the club's on this trajectory, I think, you know, titles, accomplishments like this will be happening more frequently. But to be the first, I think it makes it even more special, especially for, you know, 7 decades of nothing. Yeah, being the first, that's the important one, I think.
To everyone, I think from our side today on that bus, you can't help but see what Newcastle United can do for the city of Newcastle and what it means to represent the football club, and we need to take that seriously, and we have done, and but we need to continue to do that from this day forward to try and bring more moments like this to the people.
Just past 4:30, we've had music up on stage, thousands and thousands of fans already here, there's thousands and thousands in the centre of Newcastle by the looks of things, and up on screen there's been a massive cheers, and now they're shouting Shearer, Shearer, because presumably Alan Shearer's going to be on stage soon, but we've got images of the buses, so the convoy is en route to the town moor.
The latest one from Kieran Trippier on the left. Looking for Burn again. Oh, Dan Burn!
Would you believe it? Oh, wow! Big Dan Burn with the biggest goal that he will ever score. And the black and white end of Wembley erupts. Dan Burn with a historic header scores Newcastle United's first goal at Wembley Stadium for a quarter of a century.
So I'm just walking away from the town moor. We've just had Bruno Guimaraes dropping F-bomb after F-bomb and starting chants.
Guys, everyone with me. Na 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 na.
Quite the spectacle to see the thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people turned out on the streets of Newcastle, and then tens of thousands at least, probably into the certainly beyond 100,000 on the town moor as well, saluting the Newcastle United players and staff.
We've got the likes of Tony Tower, who's been here for so long. Give Tony a round of applause. Ray Thompson, step forward, Ray, please. Mick Curran, Neil Stoker, brilliant people. Paul Catterson, Glenn Patterson, Dan Hodges, James Bunce, Jordan Drive, Sean Jalal, Adam Bartlett. Have I missed anyone? Darren Eels, come on, do the walk.
Even bigger scenes than any of them could probably have imagined. And what was interesting as well was that Eddie Howe finished his message really on stage by saying the players have been professionals, they need so much credit for this, but now it's a big push for the final 10 games. And that was sort of the overriding feeling. I've had a couple of my friends jokingly text me saying looking forward to Newcastle United 0 Brentford 1 after that, and that is the sort of feeling that this is either Newcastle switch off and just celebrate and all they kick on and get that Champions League place. I think it's probably going to be the latter. I do think Newcastle will refocus. I think everyone wants a Champions League. Fingers crossed it goes that way. This has been a historic season regardless.
I think it's very difficult in football to make any promises, but the promise we can give is that we give absolutely everything in every moment, in every game, to try and bring long-term success to this football club. It's what the devotion and the passion and the support you give us is the least we can do, and that's what we're trying to do from this day forward.
They will always celebrate things, but the first one in 70 years was always going to be extremely, extremely special.
2 weeks ago at Wembley on that Sunday was the best feeling I've ever had on a football pitch or off a football pitch. And I was lucky enough to share it with 42,000 Jordans at Wembley. I've been waiting for this day. I've been waiting for this day all my life. My family have been waiting for this day all my life. And it's happened, and it's just incredible to see so many happy people in our city being and done so proud.
I'll leave you with this. I'm just in the Tyne Bridge. And love takes me. United we stand, divided we fall.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.